Hi, this is Mike McNamara, and you're listening to All Marine Radio on your home for it, the one and only All Warrior Radio Network. On a Tuesday, 27th day of October, welcome to the House of All Marine Radio. That's right, the house that I built. That's right. It's cold in California this morning. So the heat went on for the first time last night. Yeah, how about that? And so you got to test the heat out. I didn't think it would get that cold, though. But it did. Yeah, it straight up did. So in the middle of the night, the heater's going off. I'm thinking, how cold could it be, man? What's wrong? I mean, something's wrong. But it was cold. I mean, now, I have to tell you, California has its own cold index. I don't know what it is, but having lived in North Dakota, I would tell you that there's, like, cold equivalents. Cold in North Dakota doesn't get cold until it gets below 30 degrees. And then I'd say really cold at below 10. California, I think you kind of add 50 degrees to that, those, I mean 20 degrees to those numbers, and they're the equivalent. I don't understand it, but my kids will tell you the same thing. It was cold. Now, there may be some validity. Well, you've just not lived there in a while. You don't know what cold is. Now, that may be true. But I don't know. I'm not sure if it's the moist air or what. But anyway, fires in Southern California yesterday, not too far from me. But fires only predominantly affect rich people in California. Like when you see fires in Santa Barbara's and those communities, those are people that have chosen to like build their dream house in some new development out back in some canyon on top of some hill, all this beautiful vegetation around it, blah, 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 and then the fire starts. Yeah, well, those houses are really expensive. That's not where old Mac lives. When you have plenty of concrete and asphalt around you, you're protected. So, but they tend to start in canyons and stuff around, you know, and things like that, and where there's a lot of vegetation. And so, yeah, that in the news today. And the, so I got a text message. Are you guys okay? Yeah, when you have all the concrete that we have around us, yeah, you're not going to get touched by a fire like that. So, no problem. But the wind was, gusting up to 50 miles, 60 miles in some places inland. So, that going on. How soon right? How soon is soon enough for the election to come and be done? Like, oh my God. And then, you know, then the election of what, 2024 will begin the day after we settle this one. Well, probably not the day after, because there'll be states that are close, right? There'll be hanging chads. There'll be court cases. There'll be all kinds of quality shit that's going on. So, I mean, the sooner this nightmare goes away, the better. Except that's the whole thing of the thing. The nightmare's not going away. So anybody who thinks like, oh yeah, well, once the election comes, like, it'll be over. No. So think of the two narratives coming out of the election. Joe Biden wins, right? Then it's going to be, how far left does he try to take the country, knowing his limits in Congress? How far left? All right. And now all the lefties are going to scream, we won, our vote put you over the top, right? We need socialized medicine. We need this. We need that. We need free college for everybody. He said the other day he misspoke about that. I thought it was kind of humorous. His campaign clarified. Yeah, the candidate misspoke. The candidate misspoke on that. So then that drama will take place. But like all things American, right, it will have its momentum, it will spend itself, and we will head back to the center. Because that's, our founding fathers were geniuses in terms of creating a system that tends to force things back to the center. So we will see. I mean, again, the defund the police thing, right? And that was born, was it born in Minneapolis? If it wasn't born in Minneapolis, I think it kind of was. But if it wasn't, that's dead in Minneapolis now. Yeah. Go figure, right? That is dead in Minneapolis. So defund the police, you know, screaming and yelling all over every protest. All of a sudden, you had city council members in Minneapolis asking, hey, what's going on in the city? Why is the crime rate going up? Why? You know, because their phone is ringing. Now that they're not out of protest, now that they have to govern, their phone is ringing from what? Concerned citizens. Why? Because they see the crime rate going up. And as politicians, what do? They scurry. You know? And then they at a city council meeting, in public, they're asking the police chief, what's going on? Like, you're not paying attention? You didn't see what you did? You don't see all the things you said? You don't see the climate that you've created for us to do our jobs in? You don't see any of that? What? What are you talking about? And then, from the woman who led it, I think the president of the Minneapolis City Council, I think our words were taken. You know what? Come on. The escape card. I think our words were taken out of context. Yeah, they were. What part of defund the police don't I understand? Could you explain that to me? So, I was having a conversation with somebody last night, and they were moderately pessimistic. And I said, hey, look, these things will come and these things will go. And so this utopian thing, right, will be tried and it will fail. Or it will have to be paid for. And people's taxes will have to go up, and blah, 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 blah. So it can't get over quick enough. Now, on the other hand, if Donald Trump wins, what's the narrative that comes out of that? Which, who got woke? Yeah. And the narrative that will come out of that will be the great silent majority not only got woke, but got concerned and offended by what they saw in the nation. And they came out and vote, as they are wont to do. So it'll be interesting to see which one of those narratives. And then, you know, that Bruce Springsteen said he's going to Australia. Don't let the door hit you in the way out, Bruce. I have a thing for people that say shit like that. Just fucking leave already, man. If you're a conditional American, get the fuck out. Get out. I have no tolerance for that kind of shit. Yeah, so, I mean, how about the meltdown that will ensue if Donald Trump gets reelected? Yeah. Once again, the media not covering that story. I saw a pollster that said, you know, the very existence of our profession may be right at stake with this election. As the numbers get closer, right, towards the election, a week from today, I was listening, and this pollster said, look, I think every pollster will tell you that Trump voters tend to be underrepresented in our polls. Oh, really? What do you mean? And the response was, well, whenever you try to put together a poll, you know, you tried to have it be represented. If you want a skewed poll, then have a skewed pool. And so, you know, it's harder to find, you know, Trump supporters that will, you know, be interviewed for your poll. There's that thing in our country. Next question. Can you estimate the percentage? No, I'd say at least 1-2%. 1-2% of the poll. Interesting. So you can take whatever the deviation of the poll is, and you can add 1-2% to that? Huh. Well, that's interesting. So anyway, which narrative comes out on the backside? And then the next question is, so we've done this stuff. I'm trying to silence my phones here. There's this other thing that out there saying that once Trump's out of the way, then all this will become civil again. Do you believe that? And then what do we do about, you know, the tone and tenor of this discussion in America? I talked about the social dilemma. Go ahead and watch that. What do we do about the fact, evidently, as stated in the social dilemma, that fake news spreads at a rate 6 times faster than real news? What do we do about that? And there's people out there that will tell you that is a existential threat to our democracy, as we no longer can have a discussion based on common facts and come to a compromise solution on things, that it is more of what we see in Washington, D.C. President gives a speech, Speaker of the House stands up behind him, in front of God and everybody, just, you know, as disrespectful as you could be, right? rips it up in front of the nation. So more of that, right? Each of them convinced in their own that they're right. And that's the game we play. So where does it all go? I mean, to me, which narrative, you know? And so the quicker the next week could go by, in my opinion, the better. Let's see. Hey, Mac, I'm just listening to your interview from your Friday episode. Fucking awesome. I was very lucky. I was never in combat, but listening to gospel makes me so proud to be able that I was lucky to serve in the same organization as guys like him. Semper Fi, and good luck with your studio. If you didn't listen to the interview on Friday, it's a replay of an interview that I did a few years ago with Matt Gospodinovich, and I would tell you, listen to it. And he's just one of those guys you meet in the Marine Corps that is bigger than life, right? And he was in Beirut when with Charlie Battery 110. He was an arty guy the day the barracks was attacked and blown up, and his story is, it's pretty amazing. Pretty amazing story, but you know those events impacted, you know, and kind of transition it to post-traumatic winning. Those events impacted him his whole life. And but what comes through the interview is this Marine, right? This Marine Lance Corporal on multiple occasions. So he made Lance Corporal. He got in trouble, then he got reduced, and then he made it again, and then he got reduced again. So, and he's got this Louisiana drawl and this big personality. He's got a great nickname, Gospo. And so, if you haven't heard that interview, I would tell you, by all means, listen to it. Somebody sent me an email. They're like, hey, Mac, you work out of your house. Do you like roll out of bed and do your show? No, I don't do that. I learned. Now I've been working for myself. Since I got out of the Marine Corps. And one of the things I've learned is that if you work out of your house, you have to have the same work routine as you know, that which if you're going to work. Otherwise, yeah, that, you know, lay around in your sweats all day and stuff like that. So, no, I don't do that. I get up and I shower and I have breakfast and then I go to work. Yeah, how about that? And if you don't do that, and I speak from experience, not much, because I like to work, so I'm not one to lay around and things like that. The one thing I wish I was better at, though, is sleeping. I don't know how you get good at sleeping. I was contemplating that because I slept last night. For me, very soundly. And I went to bed relatively early. Now, normally, in the last week or so, I've been waking up at 3:30. And today I woke up, I looked at the clock, and it was 5:10. I was excited. I was like, oh my God, I slept. I slept. So, how do you become a better sleeper? I don't know. And I know things like, okay, you got to darken the room, no distractions, no electronics. Okay, once you've done all that, then what? And I don't have an answer to you for it. I kind of roll with it. So if I don't sleep a lot at night, you know, I wind up taking a nap or something during the day. And but I don't stress over it, if that makes sense or not. The other big news overnight is last night the confirmation swearing in of another justice on the United States Supreme Court. So Justice Barrett, yeah, how about that? And again, I think the important thing to understand about that is that go look at the nation's history. No Senate that is the same party in the White House has ever gapped an opportunity to see a Supreme Court justice. Doesn't happen. So go back in American history, and you know, for everybody who's crying foul and all the rest of that shit. When the Senate and the White House are divided, the Senate will not consider it in an election year. So, so that played true to form, you know, here in this session. So anyway, again, I can't wait for the election to be over, but then I say that knowing full good and well that the problem with all of that is that what's going to change, you know, what's going to change on the backside of the election? Is the way we look at our government going to change? Is the way we compromise going to change? So we're just going to have more of this burn it down shit? Right, and we're gonna have more of the hottest, craziest stories, the fake news stories, you know, blast through social media, blast through, you know, cable news. As I often say, when do the adults show up? When is that gonna happen? Email. I almost spit my coffee out when you told Bruce Springsteen to not let the door hit him on the way out. You're a Springsteen guy. Yeah, I'm an American before I'm any of that stuff, though. If you're a conditional American, I have no use for you. Yeah, there's some things, right? Your country, for better or for worse, right? It's just we American, right? And when I hear people say that, then fucking go, man. If that's what ties you to this country, then go. I hate when I read that, you know? And it's always done. And you know what? And most of the time they never leave. They never leave. So again, if that's where you're at, then by all means, right? By all means. Now, there's a story and this is, again, under the guise of, I hope, right? I hope that the Philadelphia police get the story out and get it out quick. Headlines. Right? From the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, protests flare in Philadelphia after police kill a black man. New York Times, Philadelphia police fatally shoot a black man they say had a knife. NBC, in Philadelphia, violence tears through West Philly after police shoot and kill man. 30 officers hurt. No mention that he's black. Here's the Associated Press story. police shot and killed a 27-year-old black man on a Philadelphia street after yelling him to drop his knife, sparking violent protests that police said injured 30 officers and led to dozens arrests. The shooting occurred before 4 p.m. Monday as officers responded to a report of a person with a weapon. Police were called to the Cobb Creek neighborhood and encountered the man, later identified as Walter Wallace, who was holding a knife. Officers ordered Wallace to drop the knife, but instead he advanced towards him. Both officers fired several times, Little said. Wallace was hit in the shoulder and the chest. One of the officers then put him in a police vehicle and drove him to the hospital, where he was pronounced dead a short time later. Right? Hands up, don't shoot. So what's the narrative? Here we go. Police have done it again. And again, at what point, right, does, again, if the Philadelphia police do not hold a press conference this morning and say this is wrong, this is bullshit, right, what do you want our police officers to do when somebody advances towards them with a weapon after already being told, drop the weapon? So that's the question. Somebody's coming at you, maybe to kill you. What are they supposed to do? But again, as this plays out, you know, we've seen it over and over again. A week later, after they finish their preliminary investigation, right? Let me tell you about the preliminary investigation. Okay? They will have 80% of what they need within 60 minutes of the event. The helicopter crash that happened that I was a part of, I could have told you what happened, probably 80 to 90% of what happened. The Marines in the air defense variant told me that, yeah, they checked on and they kind of flew one pass at us. We tracked them the whole time. We told them, hey, tracked you the whole time. And the response we got was, oh, yeah? Well, watch this. Okay, there's factoid one. Now we understand why they're flying up a canyon, you know, up a dried out riverbed at 7 feet off the ground. We're playing stupid fucking games. One of my sergeants, he comes up to me and goes, hey, sir, I want to show you something. He said, we were down there and I saw like a puff of dirt as it flew past us. And he said, we had backed our vehicle into one of the crevices, right? So, you know, you got the riverbed, and then on the side of it, you have all these little things kind of flowing into it. They're all dried out, right? So you back your vehicle in them, and then you put the camionettes down on the side so you make the vehicle harder to locate. So anyway, they were doing that. He's standing on one of the vehicle when the helicopter flies by. He waves. He's looking down into the helicopter from the side of the – that's how low the helicopter is, right? So anyway, he says, I saw like a puff of dirt. He said, look at this. And you can see this perfect 90-degree cut in the side of one of the fingers. And that's what sent the nose down, and that's what caused the crash. So you can go ahead and rebuild everything beyond that, but within an hour or maybe two of the crash, I could have given you 90% of what happened. And they can do the same thing. So why in the hell do you sit on that information for a week while your city burns? And you see it over and over and over as police departments or mayors. I don't know if the mayor puts a kibosh on the press conference. I don't get it, though. When these things happen, there's an information fight for the truth. And so if you don't provide your version of it, the narrative becomes what somebody else is going to put out there. So there you have it. So that is in the news today. But I have not seen any video. And really, I take that back. There is video. This video, NBC News. Somebody's pulling out a camera. Guy's got a hooded sweatshirt on. Camera's like all over the place. Guy's got a knife. Cops are backing away. One of them's a female. Right? He's coming at them with a knife. And they shoot and kill him. One male, one female. So what are the police supposed to do? They're backing up. The guy's running at them with a knife. What are you supposed to do? Okay. I don't rightly know. But again, if the Philadelphia Police Department do not have a press conference this morning, then we get more of the same. You know, another black man with a knife advancing on the police is hunted down and killed by a police officer. So, remember, the truth doesn't matter. It's only the narrative that matters. It's only the narrative that matters. So, on that note, good morning to you. Today, we're going to, we've done stuff with the Aspen Security Forum, right? So, the president's national security advisor, Robert O'Brien, spoke recently at the Aspen Security Forum. And so I want to play that for you. Okay, so we will do that. And he makes some pretty interesting comments about China. So anyway, we will listen to that this morning. Grant Newsham will join. Speaking of China, Grant Newsham will join us tomorrow. There's a really, there's a really interesting story. It was in breakingdefense.com yesterday, and that is U.S. military moves into Palau. China watches intently. It's pretty interesting. Pretty interesting story. And we're interested in the Pacific as we all pivot that way. So, good morning to you. The United States Marine Corps ban makes it official. You now know the plan of the day. Good morning. And this is dedicated to the American media, mostly reporters out there. Hopefully you can find your way to do your job at some point in the future. I know you've turned your back on it in the effort to get Joe Biden elected president, but hopefully at some point you begin to understand how important it is to have honest reporting, reporters that report the facts in a democracy, and that you embrace your role in it. There's a really interesting, opinion piece called "Saving Private Biden," and written in this morning's Wall Street Journal, right? Like that's a surprise. Written by William McGurn, And the subheadline, the press standard for 2020, no tough questions for the former vice president, right? The fix is in, right? The fix is in. So we'll talk about that. But this is, I mean, to an American media that has absolutely lost its way. And it has an impact on the nation. And so I'm not sure how it happens, but a commercially viable organization that reports facts, that has quality opinions from both sides, articulate people that can sit down and discuss issues without screaming and yelling and walking out of the room, right? So they can set an example for the whole country that we can do this, right? We can do this. So here's this is dedicated to journalism in the United States. May it refind itself.
You're betraying your whole life if you don't say what you think, and you don't say it honestly and bluntly.
What keeps you awake at night?
Nothing. I keep other people awake at night.
For this campus had prepared him well. I'm very confident that, thank you very much. If this was vodka, it'd be a lot better speech. But I'm not supposed to glamorize alcohol anymore, so young folks, you ignore what I just said.
We just have to execute. And we are executing every day, and Sergeant Major and I are very proud of what you do. Doesn't mean we can't get better. We don't want to make a mistake to learn. We don't want to lose to learn. We cannot lose if we have to go fight. We got to do what these Marines did here 75 years ago. Persevere against difficult, challenging conditions and odds and win. You got to win.
A friend of mine just sent me a note. Mac, awesome book. Does great service to post-traumatic stress with the burdens we all suffer. Read and get him on your show. Mark Trainer, A Quiet Cadence. My response, names, his name times three. When are you going to come out of the darkness? And then I attached the link to the discussion with Mark Trainer. Groping your way through life. Sad. Yeah. Sad. Bev sent me a text when I interviewed Bev. If you haven't heard that, okay, you should check that out. Right? Bev sends, I found out where the name the Calgary Flames came from. And then she says, you know, they moved to Calgary from Atlanta. I was like, how stupid of me. How do I not know that, right? I know that. How did I not remember that? But I did not. Yeah, I did not. Calgary Flames were born as the Atlanta Flames. The Flames were a throwback to the American Civil War when William Tecumseh Sherman burned Atlanta. Yeah. And it's actually a bit of a, you know, an American contribution to the idea of total war, that you make war on the population as well as on their military, right? That's kind of an American invention. So, anyway, on a grand scale, time for us to check the weather. Currently, wow, it is partly sunny and 62 in Quantico. It is partly sunny and 70 down the coast of Camp Lejeune. 29 Palms, sun and 56. Cold at 29 Palms. Marine Corps Base Camp Pendleton. It is sunny and 55 at Pendleton. Yeah, that's cold, man. Camp Smith in Hawaii, dark cloudy 71. Okinawa, dark cloudy and 71. In Darwin, down under, clear, dark, and 79. So Darwin cooled off a little bit. First time below 80, I think, since we had it in the index. And then in Oslo, Norway, it is raining again for the third day in a row and 47 degrees. At the home of All Marine Radio, we have two weather alerts, which is normal. One is a small craft advisory. And another one is a marine weather statement. So today, evidently, going to be a beautiful day. Looking for a high today of 76 degrees. Tomorrow, 74. Thursday, 75. Friday, 75. Saturday, 78 degrees. That's right. Overnight lows. Tonight, 58 degrees. So that's a little chilly here in California. So anyway, that is a look at your weather. We'll come back. We'll check all the news that's fit for you to know. We'll check that. Coming up next on the Tuesday edition of All Marine Radio, right here on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network.
We used to get together every week. She's been home from her last deployment for months now, and I haven't seen her once.
He's just been different since he got back from Iraq. One minute he's ready to go, and the next he doesn't want anyone around.
The nightmares are back and seem to be getting worse. Shouldn't he be sleeping better after all these years?
A lot of people don't understand what veterans go through during their service or when they come back. And that's okay.
But everyone can help.
You can make a difference in the life of a veteran.
You stood by us when we were in uniform. So stand by us now.
Like my brother did, when he wouldn't take no for an answer.
Like my wife did, when she asked the right questions.
Like my friend did, when she made the call.
Take a stand for those who served our country.
If you're a veteran in crisis or know one who is, the Confidential Veterans Crisis Line is here for you. Call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1. Chat at veteranscrisisline.net or text 838-255.
America's service members and veterans are strong, forged out of bravery, sacrifice, and duty. They are diverse, unique, from all corners of the country. And thanks to their common experience, a family for life. But whether they served in lands far away or communities close to home, some of these men and women may face difficult times or even crisis. But sometimes reaching out for help can be the most challenging and worthwhile mission of all for veterans, service members, reserve, and National Guard. Thankfully, friends, family, and communities are standing by their service members and veterans now more than ever. We're all in this together. When you recognize something isn't right, make the call to the Veterans Crisis Line or Military Crisis Line. During times of crisis, reach out and call. Dial 1-800-273-8255 and press 1 or chat online at veteranscrisisline.net or text 838-255.
Hi, I'm Gary Sinise. Our veterans put everything on the line to protect our freedom. We may never be able to repay them for their sacrifice, but we can show them just how much we appreciate all they've done. You can help by simply sharing your time, lending a warm smile, a supportive hand, or a sympathetic ear to someone who needs it. Everyone can do something to make veterans know just how much we appreciate their service. please visit www.volunteer.va.gov. What will you do?
We all share a common journey. We wanted to serve our country, stand for something bigger than ourselves, and protect the things we love. Although we were ready to face any mission, help those in need, and make a difference, for some of us, coming home was more of a challenge than we expected. In the service, we had each other's backs. But as veterans, it can sometimes feel like we're all alone, even when surrounded by our loved ones.
If you're a veteran or service member in crisis, or know one who is, call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1. Chat at veteranscrisisline.net or text 838-255.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
Hi, I'm Colleen McNamara, and you're listening to My Dad on All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
Some of the quotes at reading today, right? Democrats saying the Republicans will regret what they've done with the Amy, with the Justice Barrett nomination. That's exactly what Mitch McConnell said when Harry Reid packed the D.C. court to protect Barack Obama's right executive orders in 2012. He waived the Senate cloture rules, which requires 60 votes, right? And Senator McConnell said, you will regret doing this. And so what the Democrats got out of it was three, I don't know, whatever you call those justices that work in D.C. And what the Republicans have got out of it are, I think, three Supreme Court justices. And so, no, it's just funny. If you don't know anything about history, right? If you don't know anything about history, then no bueno, right? No bueno. COVID back in the news, right? Around the world, cases go up. So how do you judge a nation's performance? How do you judge a free nation's performance relative to COVID? What is the metric that you would use? Okay. So we have 50 governors, right? And you have the District of Columbia. You have Puerto Rico and Guam. So that's 53 entities. And what's the metric that you would use to see how well the nation's doing in its fight? Is it, right, is it case fatality rate? So there's two data points, right? One is case fatality rate, and the other one is deaths per 100,000. So when you look at, so again, I've months ago I told people the number of cases, as long as the people at risk aren't getting the virus, that's, you know, if the people that survive this thing are getting it, then, you know, that's fine. It's the people that are vulnerable that can't fight it that you have to protect. Okay. So how do you judge the American performance? Well, if you look at case fatality, and that is your benchmark, right? The most developed nation with the highest case fatality is Mexico. They have a 10% case fatality rate. Italy is at 7. Sweden is at 5.4. China at 5.2. The United Kingdom at 5.0. Canada at 4.1. Australia at 3.3, Spain 3.2, Ireland 3.2, Romania 3, France 2.9, South Africa 2.7, the United States 2.6. Who's south of the United States that you would consider a major developed country? Hungary and Finland are at 2.4. The Netherlands is at 2.3. Germany is at 2.2. Portugal is at 1.9. I'm looking for developed countries. Greece is at 1.8. South Korea, 1.8. Switzerland, 1.7. Russia is at 1.7. Denmark's at 1.7. Poland's at 1.7. Norway, 1.5. Okay, so the United States, I think by any judge, has done, if that's your criteria, you are well down the list in terms of major developed nations and how you've treated this at 2.6. The other criteria is deaths per 100,000 people. Now, I would tell you that this is a function of the measures that you take to control the spread of the virus, how widespread the virus is. So this gives you a sense of volume. So that was rate. This is volume. Okay. So deaths per 100,000. The highest is Belgium, developed nation that appeared in the last list, Belgium, 94.6. Brazil up there at 75. Spain at 75. Mexico at 70. The United States at 68. The United Kingdom at 67. Italy at 62, Sweden at 52, France at 52, and then at the bottom, which means we have a low rate and we have low death in terms of we've controlled it locally, Greece, you don't hear too much about Greece's fight against. Australia has controlled it in terms of volume in its country. Norway has controlled it relative to volume in its country. Japan has a 1.36 death rate per 100,000 people. That's pretty amazing. South Korea has less than one. So not only have they controlled the mortality rate, but they've also controlled the volume of it in the nation. So I would tell you that if you're going to judge somebody's COVID response, there's two parts to it. And in a system of government like ours, right, there's people that have votes. You have state governors who have an incredible vote. How about the same numbers relative to the 50 states? I wonder if they have those. I wonder, let's see, deaths by population. Come on, I need a graph. Top 20 counties by numbers of deaths. It's not what I really want, because that's a population. I want percentage. Top 50 confirmed cases. It's all the major cities in the country. Confirmed by population. So, yeah, I'm not finding the statistics that I want. But you know what I'm looking for. I'm looking for the same data except for the 50 states, which would give give us some kind of report card on what states are doing well and what states aren't doing well. Let me just do it. I'm curious now about that. COVID death rate by state. Texas cases 917,000, deaths 18,000. California 914,000, deaths 17,398. Florida 782,000 cases, 16,000 deaths. New York 500,000 cases, 33,000 cases. Death. Illinois. So I think I'm looking for per capita, right? I'm looking for per capita data in terms of state ranking. So death rates from coronavirus in the United States as of October 22nd, 2020 by state. Number one place. Most deadly place to live if you get COVID is New Jersey. Behind that, New York. Behind that, this will surprise you, Massachusetts. Behind that, Connecticut. Behind that, next, Louisiana. Next, Rhode Island. After that, Mississippi. After that, District of Columbia. After that, Arizona, Illinois, Florida, Michigan, Georgia. Huh. The best states to live for COVID, top 10, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Number 10, Montana. Number 9, Puerto Rico, not a state. So I got to put Wisconsin in there. Wisconsin's 10, right? Montana's 9. Puerto Rico, not a state, right? Then West Virginia. Then Utah, then Oregon, then Hawaii, then Wyoming, then Maine, then Alaska, then Vermont. All have, with the exception of Wisconsin, predominantly rural populations, even Utah, right? Utah would probably be the most populated state with the lowest COVID response. So the biggest states, where are they? Number one, New York, right at the top. Right, relative to population, where Texas and California. Texas is at 61, right? They are a third. They're a third of New York and New Jersey. How amazing is that? You know, we don't see this data ranked like this. Where's the Golden State? California. Maybe it's not on the list. They left it off? What the hell? No, I'm sure it's here. California at 44. So that gives you some kind of report card on what states have done well and what states have not done so well. It's astounding. If you get it, California has 44 deaths per 100,000 population. New York has 172. That's pretty stunning. That's like 6.5 times That's crazy. That's crazy. So that in the news. Let me share with you a little bit about Saving Private Biden. Because to me, the issue of the media as advocates is on display publicly in the fawning nature that they have over Joe Biden. Written by William McGurn. For those of you who don't know William McGurn, hold on, I'll just get his bio. He is a member of the Wall Street Journal editorial board. He writes a weekly Main Street column in the journal each Tuesday. Previously, he served as the chief speechwriter for George W. Bush. He spent more than a decade overseas in Brussels with the Wall Street Journal, in Hong Kong with the Wall Street Journal. In the 1990s, he was the Washington bureau chief of the Conservative National Review. He holds a BA in philosophy from Notre Dame and a master's in communication from another Catholic school, Boston University. So he's the author of this. But again, I tend to things grab me that I think speak to a broader narrative than simply the conservative agenda, right? Now, if you're a liberal and you listen to this program, you might not agree with that, but I would agree with it, which is the only vote that really matters. In the thick of the 2016 presidential campaign, the front page of the New York Times handed down the word from on high. In the era of Donald Trump, press objectivity was a luxury America could not afford. It turned out that the biased press coverage wasn't enough to keep Mr. Trump from winning. So for 2020, the press introduced a new corollary. Joe Biden must never be asked a tough question. In the past, the media's competitive juices, plus a presidential candidate's interactions with the American people along the campaign trail, would have engendered this impossible. But COVID-19 gave Mr. Biden the excuse to stay in his basement, and the press corps has run interference for Mr. Biden rather than tackle the story. At the moment, the hard questions Mr. Biden is avoiding are about the lucrative deals his son made with politically connected Chinese and Ukrainian businesses, sometimes while riding alongside his father on Air Force Two. This past week, one of Hunter Biden's former business partners, Anthony Bobulinski, accused the former vice president of lying when he said he never discussed his son's overseas business dealings, and the Hunter Biden story became a Joe Biden story. So, mind you this, the fact that he's got a wayward kid, right? Jimmy Carter had Billy Carter. If you don't know who that is, look it up, right? He was a shit show. Pretty funny, but he was a shit show, right? So, right? Your kids all can't be, you know, water walkers. Well, I guess they could be, but, you know, in this case, Hunter Biden, I mean, he's a pretty flawed human being, right? So anyway, and just read a little bit about him. He's a walking shit show. Anyway, that's no crime in this country. Having a kid that's a shit show is not a crime. What is a crime, though? Nah, maybe it's not a crime, but where you become culpable is you lie about it. Right? You lie about it. Now, that story has not been tackled. Okay. McGurn goes on. And it's not only the press. When the New York Post published text and emails from the laptop, along with an explanation of how they came into the Post possession, Twitter and Facebook ran interference by suppressing the story and the Post Twitter account on their platforms. The rationale appears to be that Mr. Biden can't handle the questions and the American people can't be trusted to handle the answers. This is hear no evil, see no evil, speak no evil approach to Mr. Biden started with Tara Reid, a former Senate staffer who accused the candidate of having sexually harassed her in 1993 when she worked for him. When Julie Swetnick asserted in 2018, without any corroboration, that she witnessed Supreme Court nominee Brett Kavanaugh participating in gang rapes at a high school party, the Times ran the story the same day. But when Ms. Reid accused Mr. Biden of sexual assault, the previous Believe the Woman standard was given the heave-ho, and the Times waited 19 days to report it. To report it. Not to comment on it, to report it. Meanwhile, Mr. Biden's press conferences sometimes become a contest between reporters and the candidate to see who could hate Mr. Trump the most. In August, after an anonymously sourced story in The Atlantic accused Mr. Trump of disparaging dead American soldiers from a World War I cemetery, the magazine's Edward Isaac Dovray asked Mr. Biden, "When you hear these remarks, suckers, losers, recoiling from amputees, what does that tell you about Mr. Trump's soul and the life he leads?" Ed O'Keefe of CBS noted Mr. Biden had said that he was trying to restrain himself about Mr. Trump and then served up this hardball. Quote, "Aren't there a lot of people out there who are supporting you or inclined not to vote for the president who say, why isn't Joe Biden angrier about all of this?" So he goes on. At the end, the best summary of the new standard in election coverage was given by Mark Hemingway of Real Clear Investigations. After a particularly fawning news conference, he relayed the assessment to a friend. "Watching the press handle Joe Biden is like watching someone make sure a three-year-old wins Candyland." So that is from Mr. McGurn today. And again, so the media as advocates, are we all good with that? Do you think that's going to change post-election? And what the hell do you do about it? When the media decides that they don't have a responsibility to report anymore, that their reporting is an extension of their editorial page, not separate, but that it is part and parcel of the editorial page. What do we do about that? Not exactly sure. Not exactly sure. News stories. Top story from Stars and Stripes. Sewage spills, contaminated water, Iranian building materials found at U.S.-funded prison site in Afghanistan. Look, if you want to walk down the road of a horror story, go follow the funding trail of what happened to American dollars in both Iraq and Afghanistan. You won't sleep at night. Story about Marine Corps tankers. Semper tanks. Marines hold on to tanker Spirit as the 100-year legacy ends. Quote, "We are small and we are really cut from the same cloth," said Major Ronald J.R. Vasilik, an armor officer who launched a YouTube channel this summer where the tight-knit community can document its own legacy. "I will always be a tanker." Dubbed 100 Years of Marine Corps Tankers, the channel was born days after the 4th of July as tank companies were closing their M1 A1 Abrams tanks and being hauled away. The Marines who crewed them were being asked to retrain, change services, or retire. "It's a way for us to keep our stories alive," Vasilik said in a phone interview. "The series is going to go for as long as I have interviews." Let me see if I can get him on here. We'll talk about his YouTube channel. So, there you have it. That in the news today. Air Force Ospreys made their first landing aboard a Japanese destroyer to start the Keen Sword exercise that will include 9,000 service members, Navy, Marine Corps, Army, Air Force, and 37,000 Japanese personnel, along with 20 ships and 170 aircraft. Again, the more we do in the Western Pacific, again, it is the Pacific Defense. No, the Pacific Deterrence Initiative. Kind of what we've done in Europe. And again, if we could just get Germany on board in Europe, you know, then Europe would be a very, very calm place. But Germany, the destabilizing influence of Germany on the continent. There's a story that I find interesting, and that is the Coast Guard. Coast Guard homeporting cutters in the Western Pacific to counter Chinese illegal fishing. This is interesting because this is an enforcement aspect, right? This is an enforcement aspect of, that's kind of unprecedented. The Coast Guard is strategically homeporting its newest fast response cutters in the Western Pacific to police illegal fishing in the region by China. National Security Advisor Robert O'Brien announced on Friday. The cutters will conduct maritime security missions such as fisheries patrol, enhance maritime domain awareness and enforcement efforts with U.S. partners in the Western Pacific. We have limited offshore surveillance and enforcement capacity, he said in a statement. China's illegal, unreported, and unregulated fishing and harassment of vessels operating in the exclusive economic zones of other countries in the Indo-Pacific threatens our sovereignty as well as the sovereignty of our Pacific neighbors and endangers regional stability. O'Brien did not specify where the vessels would be based or when they would arrive, but Guam is awaiting two additional cutters after last month receiving the first of three to be stationed there. So, Coast Guard cutters, how about that? Working with other Pacific they can't be navies, or maybe they could, depending on the nation's constitution. But specifically pointed at, if you don't know what an economic exclusion area is, it is, I believe, 220 miles. Economic exclusion zone. An economic exclusion zone is a sea zone prescribed in the 1982 United Nations Convention on the Law of the Sea. Over which a sovereign nation has special rights regarding the exploration and use of marine resources, including energy, production of water, and wind. It stretches from the baseline out to 200 nautical miles from the coast of the state in question. The term may include the continental shelf. The term does not include either the territorial sea or the continental shelf beyond the 200 nautical mile limit. So if you look at somebody's coast, right? So you have a coastline, you have your territorial waters, that's 12 miles. There's a contiguous zone that extends from 12 to 24 miles. Beyond your contiguous zone, out to the 200-mile mark, is an economic exclusion zone. You have the right, you have the right to the resources that surround your country. So if you look at the world's economic exclusion zone, if you look at that map, there gets to be a problem, and that is where nations lie in proximity to each other. For instance, okay, Cuba and the United States. So you have to work out a treaty on what belongs to who. Okay. In the case of the South China Sea, you see a series of overlapping claims in the region as there's all those nations on top of each other. Vietnam, right, out across to the Philippines, right? Malaysia claims lay on top of that. Indonesia's claims lay on top of a part of that. So normally what nations do is they form some kind of joint commission. They study it. They come to an agreement. That's not what your friends in China are doing. Right? Their fishing boat votes, also called the Chinese militia, right? They run other people off. So what's it, Mac? What's the distance between, in nautical miles, the distance between the Philippines and Vietnam? 532 nautical miles. I know these kind of things. Okay. I also have Google Earth up. So if you look at their economic exclusion zones of the South China Sea, you see China's kind of got a bubble. You see Vietnam's got a bubble with overlap with China. You see the Philippines has a bubble with essentially no overlap with China, except China drew this nine-dash line and said, we own everything. What? So, again, that shit normally gets taken, you know, to the International Court of the Hague, which the Philippines did, and the International Court of the Hague, their tribunal or their court that deals with the law of the seas ruled in favor of the Philippines. Philippines let it go, though. Didn't want to piss off the Chinese anymore. But anyway, the Philippines don't, they're now talking about arming their fishing boats, arming their militia boats so that they can enforce, right, what is their sovereign right. And they've been, their fishermen have been continually pushed out of fishing in their own waters that they own by the Chinese, who say, no, 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 no. You didn't get the memo? We've claimed this. This belongs to us. So anyway, so it's very interesting because this will be a confrontation between an American Coast Guard cutter, right, with another, not with, you know, people off the Alaskan coast or people off the California coast or the coast of Virginia or Florida or what have you, but with Chinese fishermen. So Coast Guard, this is going to be a very, very interesting chapter in life. Top stories in the Wall Street Journal this morning. AMD agrees to buy rival chip maker. XIL Xilinx for $35 billion. Next story. Struggling rental market could usher in the next great American housing crisis. Well, what do you mean? What are you going to do? You're going to evict everybody? That might be a crisis. That might be a crisis. Right? So, those are top stories in Wall Street Journal. From USNI News, when you want good naval news, USNI News. Trust me. Story from last week. SecDef Esper's Battle Force 2024 plan still awaiting White House approval. There's a great graphic. It says, report to Congress on joint all-domain command and control. And it has, it's a picture. And it has all the little things that are up in the air. This is awesome, as a matter of fact. This picture, I need to check this out. Command and control in all domains. Wow, you should check it out. There's all kinds of shit up there. There's, let's see, there's missile warning satellites, there's SATCOM, satellite communications, There's satellite, digital satellites, PNT signals. I don't even know what that is. ISR is up there, right? There's commercial satellite communication. Then there's synthetic aperture radar. Have no idea what that is. There's radar EA, right? Don't know what that is. Command-guided missiles. There's data links orbiting. All kinds of shit. Maritime operations, laser communications, tracking radars, SATCOM jammers, radar-guided missiles, laser dazzlers, GPS-aided artillery. It's a total shit show. This is awesome. Now, this is my question. If you lose the battle in space, everything else is bullshit. Because if you don't own space, you don't own your communications, then we go Vietnam. Yeah, Green Gear, HF. I say again. Lima, Echo, Whiskey. Hey, what's that noise? Oh, shit. Hey, what do we do? I don't know. I put your earplugs in because normally those things travel in pairs. Yeah, that's how that shit works. So you better get fired up about space war. Yeah, because they've got to win. Airbus orders naval aviation safety stand down after two crashes. Now, we talked about the fatal crash, right? Two female aviators, one a instructor, one a student, crashed into a residential area, which you don't see often. The head of naval aviation has ordered a safety stand down after two crashes last week, only 3 days apart. All non-deployed aviation units stopped operation on orders from Naval Air Force's Vice Admiral Kenneth Whitesell, the service announced. Last Friday, which would have been the 23rd, a Navy T-6B Texan II crashed in a town in Alabama near Pensacola. For those of you who don't know, Pensacola in the panhandle, right at the edge of it, within minutes of Alabama. On October 20th, an F-18E Super Hornet crashed near Naval Air Station China Lake. The pilot was recovered safely. So the Navy's doing a safety stand down, which you would expect. And, you know, it's odd that we talked about no fatalities in aviation just last week. You know, and then all of a sudden there's two. An Iranian spy ship commands a strategic position on a vital oil route. So a story about the Iranians, right? Now, why have the Iranians been so quiet? Do they think that when they puff up and the president, right, he puffs up, that may help him? And they've dialed down their shit till after the election? Interesting little sale of weapons. The State Department authorized $2.37 billion missile sale to Taiwan. One China, two systems. One missile, any target. The Harpoon. It is a this the Harpoon. Is a whatever platform to ship missile system. The recipient will be able to employ a highly reliable and effective system to counter or deter maritime aggression, coastal blockades, and amphibious assault. This capability easily integrates into existing force infrastructure. The recipient will have no difficulty absorbing these systems into its armed forces. So, there you have it. Yeah. I talked to somebody down at 7th ESB because I think I'm going to go down there and speak. And they just recovered their Marines that were fighting wildfires in Central California, and they were all kinds of proud. They said, we didn't have any injuries to speak of, you know, just normal stuff that you would expect, sprained ankles, some cuts, you know, but nothing significant. And about 250 Marines and some sailors, right? And they said, you know, the people that were managing the fires couldn't say better things about the Marines. Thought it was an awesome experience for the Marines to operate in a real-world environment where leadership probably in that situation no different than you'd get in any other contingency operation. A great set of repetitions. And they also said, we did more with your Marines than we do with most starting firefighters because of the way they performed. We just gradually, as they, you know, got their feet underneath them, we gave them more and more complex tasks, and they were fantastic. So they were congratulations to 7th ESB and 1MAF. Congratulations to them for the work they did fighting fires. Top story in Marine Corps Times today is same as it was yesterday. 97-year-old Iwo Jima veteran. Going to participate in the Marine Corps Marathon. He'll be in a wheelchair. And the top five stories in Early Bird today. Number one, Navy orders aviation stand down. Number two, F-35 to move its full rate production later, to move into its full rate production later than expected. Now, again, you have Marine Corps trying to cut the number of aircraft that it's going to buy. Can you imagine how pissed Congress is when they see that? You want to do what? Not only no, but hell no, man. Do you know what we had to do to put this buy together? To create all the circumstances to get the cost to this. And you know what you cutting your buy is going to do to the total? Yeah, I can imagine that landed, you know, that went over like a lead balloon. Like, not at all. Number three, China to sanction Boeing, Lockheed, and Raytheon over the Taiwan arms sales. So who gives a shit if Boeing sanctions them? Through those people supply anything to the Chinese? Number four, VMI superintendent resigns after Northam orders probe into structural racism at the historic military college. Northam is the governor. This is the beauty of this, right? Do you remember the governor of Virginia that what was the picture? Was he wearing the hood of a Northam? What was the image? Yeah, here it is. He's in a picture. And I believe he's the guy in the KKK outfit, if I'm not mistaken. He's ordering. He somehow or other, the guy survived it. He just refused to quit. Virginia Governor Ralph Northam on Friday, this is in a whole year and a half ago, acknowledged appearing in a clearly racist and offensive photograph in his 1984 medical school yearbook that shows a man in blackface and another in a Ku Klux Klan robe. I am deeply sorry for the decision I made to appear as I did in the photo and for the hurt that decision caused then and now. This behavior is not in keeping with who I am today and the values I have fought for throughout my career in the military, in medicine, and in public service. Northam did not say whether he was the man dressed in blackface or the one in the Klan robe. Right? How rich is this? You can't make it up. And the picture is alma mater, VMI Institute, Interest Pediatrics. And he's standing here, right? He's standing there either in blackface or in a Ku Klux Klan outfit, one of the two. And he just refused to quit. That dude is now, this is so rich, right? That dude is now, right, ordering a probe into his alma mater into structural racism. Okay? At VMI. The superintendent of VMI resigned Monday, a week after Democratic leadership in the state ordered an investigation into what they characterized as a culture of ongoing structural racism. Retired Army General J.H. Binford P. III tendered his resignation on Monday, and the Board of Visitors, that must be the board that runs it, accepted it with deep regret, according to the board's president, John Boland. So, so again, the superintendent on a report from the Washington Post that described black cadets and alumni facing relentless racism, right? And I haven't read the article, so I don't know what the article contained. He resigns on that. The governor, though, there's a picture published of him being a racist. And he stays. Someday somebody can explain that to me. Number five, veterans have been targets of foreign manipulation. Now they're fighting it before the election. Whatever. Overseas operations. Anything that U.S. forces killed five Taliban attacking an Afghan security unit, according to U.S. forces Afghanistan. I don't get, I thought that like peace talks were, why is there still fighting going on? If I was the people of Afghanistan, I would be so not good with this. And we need to get the election, right, done. So the president can say, yeah, we're not leaving there. We're going to hang around for a bit to make sure the Taliban live up to their part of the deal. Right. U.S. says seven al-Qaeda leaders killed in a Syria attack. And we all know how these drone attacks, like, they stop al-Qaeda cold, right? Wrong. No impact. This is the Vietnam body count. Right? Somebody make it go away. U.S. says seven al-Qaeda leaders. U.S. Central Command said on Monday the strike took place on October 22nd, and the leaders who have not been identified by name were meeting in Idlib. Quote, the removal of these Al-Qaeda Syria, Cuba, where did that come from? You know where that came from? Al-Qaeda, and I threw an R in there. And the thought went through my brain, that's how people from Massachusetts say Cuba, and then I said Cuba. I was thinking it. It shouldn't have come out of my mouth, though. Anyway, the removal of these Al-Qaeda Syria leaders will disrupt the terrorist organization's ability to further plot and carry out global attacks threatening U.S. citizens, our partners, and innocent civilians, according to Central Command spokesman Major Beth Reardon. Okay, Beth, let me give you a lesson. Not for very long, though. Somebody else will get a new cell number. Somebody else will take over, and they will go on. Sorry to break the news to you, but Beth, you might want to relay that up to your ops people that while we make great fanfare of this shit, it has no impact on their ability to operate. They are a hydra. They're an octopus, and they will repair themselves, and they will continue. All right. That is a really long version of the news this morning. I did not intend to do that. I've got an email. interesting thought, Mac, that what happens after all of this? I believe, probably like you do, these are watershed times in which we live in, and the media has chosen a side. Very dangerous when reporters do that, and the narrative, no pun intended, trumps the truth. But that's where we're at today. I think that your idea is the one that has the most merit someday. And that would be a high-quality news organization with high-quality commentators, articulate discussion, and news devoted to facts would be a commercially profitable event that people would support with their wallets. I would hope that if you could recruit the talent into that, that would be something that would attract the majority of people under the bell curve. You know what? To me, it's got to be commercially viable, right? It's got to be commercially viable. And so you look at all the people and all the different ways we consume news. I mean, think about the biggest names in news reporting doing the news on a nightly basis, right? Having discussions with reporters about facts, you know, that you could watch so that that story in Philadelphia gets reported like this. Hey, today, Philadelphia police officer shot and killed an armed black suspect in Philadelphia. They were called to the scene when the man was acting erratically, according to reports of local people here. Now, I'm the reporter standing out there, right? They then confronted the man, and here's the videotape. Clearly, he's armed, clearly advances towards the police. The only question I have in my mind was, did one of the officers have a taser that possibly could have been used before deadly force was applied? Reporting from the scene, Mike McNamara, right? The credible news network, CNN. Maybe we should do credible with a K. KNN. I don't know. Call it something. But anywho, you would know by virtue of the quality of the reporters and then the quality of commentators, both conservative and liberal, and what you, again and again, the opinion part of the show, which would be awesome, is the McNeil Lear News Hour. That's what you would see. You got to go out and recruit those kind of people. And then the news people ought to be hard-ass news people. No opinion. We report facts. And then, you know, put that on some network and, you know, and let it be a beacon in the night. And hopefully the ratings go through the roof. And we can break. And again, if you haven't watched The Social Dilemma, watch it. Somehow or other, we have to bust out of that, out of this thing that is going on. And I believe that it's so. This is America. It's got to be commercially viable. Again, think about that. Fake news spreads, according to, you know, that documentary. And this is a guy who said it, who worked for Google. He worked for Google, ultimately became an ethical engineer at Google or something like that. And, you know, he says, hey, look, fake news spreads at a rate 6 times out of real news. Cause it's it's way hotter, right? Always fake news is. And so, anyhow, all right, we'll take a break. But no, that's what I see. Commercially viable, high quality news, and then people have to support it with their wallet. And in that news would include both perspectives, both conservative and liberal. And see, to me, and this is from the time that I spent on a city council, where you have a budget and you have responsibility to the people of the community. Mac, how do you feel about the city being green? I'm all about the city being green, right? How green do you want me to be? Well, I really want you to be green. Okay, do you understand that we pay money to recycle? Recycling, you think of it as you take your cans in and you get money, right? Right. Well, we have to move our recycling, right? Everything we recycle, everything we bale, all has to be transported to a regional recycling center that's down in, for us, it was Minneapolis. That's a six-hour truck drive away. Everything we recycle, banded, right, bagged in some cases, put on trucks, and driven down there. Recycling costs us money. Can I raise your taxes in order for the city to be green? What? Yeah, will you pay for it with your tax money? Well, I kind of want my taxes to go down. Okay, then where does being green rank in terms of streets, in terms of funding of our redevelopment of our downtown, in funding of our water projects, in right all of our capital projects? Where does being green fit in there, and what would you have me drop out of that in order to keep the budget stable? Those are the complex discussions that have to be on TV, right? And then what you find is the people screaming on the outside, you look and say, somebody shut that person up, right? We don't have the money to do that. Joe is barking for some reason. Maybe Colleen's here. I don't know. Here's another email. China. Doesn't it feel like things have amped up a bit? The sale of harpoons to Taiwan, the U.S. Coast Guard deploying to the West Pac, seems more freedom of navigation sorties. To me, it feels like we've gotten our hands on some scary intelligence. Well, let me. I don't know about that. Here's what I would say. We've danced around this shit for decades. Really. We've, again, under the narrative of the elder Bush, the more China, right, the more China is, it comes into the world of free nations, is economically integrated into the world of free nations, they will become a liberal, right, communist country. Oh, okay. And then, you know, and then as that discussion went, then not only will they be a liberal communist country, they will then, you know, move away from their communist model, and they will go ahead and they will become a socialist country. And then it's going to be wonderful. That was the narrative. Now, George Bush was president of the United States, what, 1990-ish, right? Was that the presidential election of 1988 that he won? And then he lost to Bill Clinton. So we're going on three decades of that fairy tale, okay, that charade, okay? Then we went through in the last, what would you call it? In the last 20 years, the younger Bush, Barack Obama, 16 years, we went through this hear no evil, see no evil, speak no evil thing that we did with the Chinese. And that was in spite of their picking our pockets, in spite of what they were doing around the world, in spite of what they were doing in the South China Sea, we just pretended, right? We just pretended like it was all good. And again, I mentioned, you know, my favorite Orrin Hatch quote. When Donald Trump started levying tariffs on Chinese goods, Orrin Hatch, dyed-in-the-wool conservative. This really concerns me because I'm a free trader. Like, are you math challenged? I thought, you know, Utah had a good school system. Evidently not, Orrin, because you can't add. If you think the relationship between the United States and China is in any way, shape, or form balanced, right? As I said yesterday, your head's so far up your ass, the good news is you'll be seeing out of your mouth pretty soon. That's how far your head is up your ass. So, you know, It's laughable. So I believe this is simply the expansion of the reconciliation, right? And you got to do it with your partners, right? And you got to find ports for this stuff of the fact that has been consistent in the Trump administration. And that is, you know, the Chinese are a no bullshit threat. And we, in a no bullshit way, have to respond to it. I don't see it as there's something secret that we've found out. It's in plain view, for God's sakes. And it's been in plain view for a while. You know, as Grant Newsham said, you know, this is the first time the United States has stood up on its hind legs and looked at the Chinese and said, sorry, not so much. So I don't think it's, and the same thing with the Japanese. And I've said this. It makes me, you know, we just signed it. And again, I don't know why. Didn't seem to get too much fanfare. India, U.S. defense, cooperation, right? We just signed an agreement with India. That's a big deal. Okay. I'm just trying to find what I believe to be a credible news organization. This is the, let's see. This is 4 hours ago from India TV. So this is an Indian perspective. Right. Defense Minister Rajnath Singh, after attending 2+2 India-U.S. ministerial dialogue on October 27th in New Delhi, said that their military-to-military cooperation is progressing very well. And so then there's a TV story that I'm not going to play for you. This is from the South China Morning Post. So, by a guy named Keegan Elmer in Beijing. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo will meet Prime Minister Narendra Modi. I didn't know his first name. Prime Minister Modi of India. Amid reports, Washington will share satellite intelligence with New Delhi. Whoa, the two countries have stepped up cooperation on security after the confrontation along the Chinese-India border began in May. We can help you. We would love to. The United States and India are preparing to sign an agreement to share satellite intelligence, media reports say, as the two sides seek to enhance security cooperation. Now, so I mean, look at this in through the broad lens, right? You have U.S. Coast Guard cutters now moving to enforce maritime law of the sea orders, which will certainly create a confrontation with China. All right, but hopefully we do that with the Australian Navy, with the Indian Navy, with the Japanese Navy, and it gives us an opportunity, right, to stand in common ground with the Philippine Navy, with the Vietnamese Navy, with every nation in the Navy in the region. So I think it's honestly it's a stroke of genius because we've been struggling to find common ground with some of these nations for a long time. So not a bad thing. I also think that so that's one part of it, right? And now anytime the United States and India's got 1.38 billion people. I looked it up last night. Why? Because I'm getting to the end of writing my script for post-traumatic winning, the detailed script. The dictation from the 5+ hours is 60 pages long. That's what the script turns into, 60 pages written. So anyway, I'm almost to the end of that. So I play this audio from this Indian psychiatrist. In fact, I'll play it for you now. It's interesting. Trust me. Trust me on this. Okay. Trust me, I'm a doctor. My father-in-law used to say that. It was hilarious. Yeah. He would do that with his wife. Maureen, I won't, I should, no, I will. He was a funny, God, you know, God bless my father-in-law. He is a funny guy, 6'8" doctor. But he'd have a couple beers in him, and his wife would rock by, and he'd kind of reach for her in the area of her breast. And he'd say, "What? I'm a doctor. I'm just making sure you're healthy. I'm just making sure you're healthy." He was the best. He was a great guy. Anyway, so this is a Indian doctor by the name of Madhukar Trivedi. He's doing a study in Dallas, okay? And I want you to listen. This is mental health stuff, okay? So we're going to switch gears. But this is why I know that there's approximately 1.4 billion people in India.
That's absolutely right. So our screening is really universal screening. If you, what traditionally happens in primary care is people wait and the patient either complains or starts crying or is suicidal is when they screen. That is not called screening because then it's too late. So what this is, we are primary care practices are universally screening. Every patient coming into the clinic gets screened for depression, and that is how you identify whether they need to have further monitoring or not. And that is the 12 to 15% of patients. Once they get screened positive, then they get routine measurement at every treatment occasion to monitor their outcomes. And if the patients have significant need for psychiatry, they are referred, and that has been really less than 1% of the population.
Did you hear that? So this guy, Trivedi, mental health in India has to have a community-based component because they don't have enough mental health providers for 1.4 billion people. So they've taken to standing up community-based programs. And so what they found, and so now he's in the United States, you know, putting some of those lessons learned to work. So he creates a software, and they recruit general practitioners to use it. And what the idea is that every patient who comes into your office is going to get screened for depression. So 44,000 people in this study, pretty good number of people, right? 12 to 15% of the patients ping for symptoms of depression 3 times. And once they do that, they begin to monitor that. So ultimately, 1% go to see, right, a psychiatrist. 1%. That's the civilian population. And they're crazy as fuck. We all know that. They can't, I mean, that crazy as fuck segment, they can't get into DOD. They can't join the military. So that's the good news. Well, what happens to the other 11 to 14%? Well, who talked to them? Their general practitioner talked to them. What did they talk about? Diet, exercise, alcohol consumption, sleep, and disclosure, talking about it. And how long does that general practitioner talk to them about those things? Well, how much time do you spend with your general practitioner? 5, 10, 15 minutes? So the good news is we spend a lot more time with the people that we care about than 5, 10, 15 minutes. And we can all be a part of that solution. So that's the Indian part of post-traumatic winning. Dr. Trivedi. So anyhow, anytime the United States gets together with India, there's two nations that take a lot of notice of that. One is China, certainly. And the other one is Russia. Yeah, Dr. Evil's lair there. So I think this stuff is a long time coming, because home porting, right, creating the operational design that frees those cutters, that's not done, you know, that's not done on a short-term thing. Those are long-term planning efforts. But what you're seeing, I believe, is the nation has pivoted to the Pacific. And now you're starting to see outward manifestations of that, where before we simply saw, you know, what was in place and the overtures that had been associated with those efforts for decades, right? Which are, you know, changing what Seventh Fleet does on the margin, blah, 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 blah. And so now what you have is, and what you're going to see in the future is you're going to see, you know, initiatives like the initiative in Palau, right? And let me just as I end this unintentional, extremely long section of the news, but it's interesting stuff. U.S. military moves into Palau. China watches intently. Subheadline. In a recent meeting between the Secretary of the Navy and the President of Palau, the U.S. signaled commitments to enhance its presence in Palau for more and promised more military activity in the future. So, and there's a picture of Marines and sailors disembarking from, can't tell what ship. Hold on. Now I'm committed to finding out what ship this is. I'm blowing up the back end of the ship. U.S. naval ship, City of Bismarck. What is the City of Bismarck? USNS City of Bismarck. That's kind of a weird name for a ship, isn't it? Is the ninth Spearhead class expeditionary fast transport operated by Military Sealift Command. The name was originally announced as Bismarck. It is the first ship in the naval service named after Bismarck, North Dakota. What the hell? The keel was laid on 18 January. Former Attorney General, longtime Bismarck City resident, and retired Navy officer Robert Weefald represented North Dakota at the keel laying ceremony. His welded initials into the steel plate will be welded to the ship. So it shows a picture of the City of Bismarck. Here's the story. The past 2 months have seen visits by both the Secretaries of Defense and the Secretary of the Navy to Palau, where commitments were offered about more U.S. attention to the country, according to meeting notes seen by Breaking Defense. The president of Palau, Tommy Remengesau, recently handed letters to two U.S. officials in which he asked the U.S. to consider building a new base on the small nation of 17,000 inhabitants. The letter passed to Defense Secretary Mark Esper and Navy Secretary Kenneth Brathwaite, said the island boasts port facilities, secondary airfields, law enforcement training grounds, and maritime enforcement and surveillance facilities, which can be used as opportunities to strengthen U.S. military readiness. How about that? The United States has an agreement with Palau that allows citizens of Palau to serve in the U.S. Armed Forces. And this agreement will serve as the basis, right, for the that agreement will be expanded, right, to include military rights, blah, 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 blah. So interesting stuff, right? Interesting stuff. Here's what's going on in Palau. Just before Secretary Brathwaite, right, he's the Secretary of the Navy, visit here in the past couple of weeks, the Japan-based USS Comstock docked for a week-long stay where sailors are working to remove unexploded ordnance. Huh? On October 12th, a C-130 flight brought 24 Air Force personnel to evaluate runways and tarmacs at the airfield in Babaloab, Peleliu, and anger. Holy shit, man. You know, going back to Peleliu, that would be crazy, right? Sledge fought there. 1st Marine Division fought there. The Coast Guard cutter Sequoia arrived this month to lay navigation buoys following a similar visit in May. The string of islands in the Philippine Sea sits between, and those are the Palau Islands, right, one of which is Peleliu, sits between the Philippines and Guam, the former being a major hub of the U.S. Navy and the Marine Corps, and also occupies a critical location for China in moving out of the first island chain. So, I mean, that stuff's a big deal, and this stuff has been a long time in coming. You know, with the election, you know, are we going to turn around and say, yeah, let's all make friends again? And which is not a bad idea conceptually, right? And what did Theodore Roosevelt say? Walk softly and carry a big stick. And so, yeah, we're happy to be friends with China. Let's sort out the economic stuff. But make no mistake about it. We will bolster our defensive posture in the Pacific so that you will know that, you know, any kind of military event, you know, would be met with overwhelming force by not only the United States. And I don't know that we're in a position, the way China's building its military, to exercise overwhelming force anymore. I don't believe we are. But the United States, in conjunction with India, in conjunction with Japan, in conjunction with South Korea, in conjunction with the Philippines, right, in conjunction with Vietnam, yeah, there's not much China can do about that. So, in conjunction with now Taiwan, yeah, with all those harpoon missiles. So, Joe Biden doing the kabuki dance relative to fracking. I'm going to eliminate fracking. Did I say that? That's not what I meant to say. I'm not eliminating fracking. Come on. I'm just trying to get elected, right? Anyway, again, I think Ben Shapiro's advice is sage advice. Just get out of Senator Biden's way, former Vice President Biden's way, and as he has historically done, he will screw himself up. But we shall see. The next week cannot pass quick enough in order for us to get this in the rearview mirror. So with all of that said, actually a lot of stuff in the news today. I found it very, very interesting. There's Joe. Joe barks at anything. So we'll take a quick break, and then you're going to hear and something really interesting from – I'm a huge fan of the Aspen Security Forum. It's more the kind of articulate discussion that we need. And you're going to hear the president's national security advisor, Robert O'Brien, talking about a host of security issues. So don't touch that dial. More of All Marine Radio coming up next right here on your home for it. The one and only, right, and growing All Marine Radio right here on the All Warrior Radio Network.